you seek more than comfort. I want freedom. I don't want comfort. I want prosperity and abundance. I don't want comfort. No complacency. No complacency. No backing off. No slack whatsoever. Fight.
You're still alive. You're still here.
You're still breathing. And if you're still breathing, that means you've still got some fight left in you. So get up and go out and do the work.
All right. Good to see everybody here today. This is a good crowd today. Thank you for being here. And if you're a guest, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday morning with us on this beautiful 90-degree storm possible day. And yesterday we got all the threats of big storms. Nothing came our way. And I hope it's that way again today. We're concluding the series Cornerstone Plus, and just to bring you up to speed on it, if you haven't been with us each week, we titled this simply because Ephesians chapter 4, verse 20 through 22 talks about Jesus Christ being our chief cornerstone upon which everything else is built, which means when we begin to walk in faith, we begin to follow Christ, however you want to phrase it, that's a starting point, and it's very exciting, but it's a point we begin, and we use different words to be able to describe certain areas. The first week was being a cultivator, cultivating our relationship with Christ and with others. We talked about being a catalyst, somebody who actually creates change. We talked about being a contributor, which means serving. It's more important to serve than to be served. We talked about a craving, which means where our desires are by our choice. We crave things based upon our experiences. And I mentioned the fact that little babies, when they're born, they have that formula, which tastes so terrible. We start off their life by giving them that, and then we give them strained peas, which is great food. But then once in a while, Grandma and Grandpa come over, which we've done, and even though our kids may yell at us for doing this because they think they're better at raising their kids than we are, of course, we already messed them up, so I guess they have a little bit of a leverage there. We start giving them some ice cream and chocolate syrup and things. Next thing you know, they want all the good stuff. I've never been really craving anything like broccoli, but I do crave things that are salty and sweet. And so, but that's all by experience. And I talked about people that try to start getting healthy physically, and they say, well, I never can see myself just eating fruits and vegetables, eating healthy. After a while, that's what you begin to crave once you begin to start that program, and your cravings do change. And then we talked about being connected to other people and in building and relationships with others and keeping those. Today, we're going to talk about complacency. And I mentioned last few weeks that this is probably the most important one because it bookends where we started. We started on cultivating a relationship, that beginning point where we begin to learn more about God, learn more about ourselves, begin the fellowship with other believers, and get that excitement going. But over time, like anything, we begin to get in a rut. I mentioned that routines aren't bad, but a rut is bad. Routines can be good if you choose the right routines. And so today we're going to talk about complacency because this is the warning place. This is the place we have to beware of. In relationships, we can't get complacent with relationships. We can't get complacent with what we do for a living. And it's hard sometimes, especially when you do something so long. It's been asked many times about how do you as a pastor, after pastoring this church 18 years and other churches for a total of 30, almost 37 years, how do you keep it fresh? And the answer is sometimes, and I'll share this near the end, we have to recreate ourselves to bring change so it becomes a fresh new start. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But we need to be careful about complacency. We're going to get to that in a few minutes. I want to start by reading the first passage we read 6 weeks ago and where our story began. And it's when Jesus talked about and he gave things in a parable, and it really set the tone for the series. It said in Matthew chapter 13, verse 24 through 30, he said this, Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds along among the wheat and went away. And when the wheat sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him and said, sir, didn't you sow a good seed in your field? Where then did the weeds come from? An enemy did this, replied. The servants asked him, do you want to go and pull them up? And he answered, because you are pulling the weeds and you may uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell you the harvester, or I will tell the harvester, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned, and then gather the wheat and bring them to the barns. And basically, is one thing we were talking about as we cultivate relationship, we have to be careful not to allow certain things that will impact the growth of the proper things in our lives. And sometimes those thorns get there. Sometimes they call them wheat and tares get there. Sometimes those things grow up. And I learned a little bit of this because we just pulled out our shrubs and in front of our house, we planted flowers, and already I see stuff growing there that's not supposed to be there. And if we don't pull it up, it's going to choke the good stuff. So we talked about that. But today we're going to talk about complacency. And there's an old saying, you've all probably heard it, is that idle hands are a devil's workshop. It's one of those cliches we use quite a bit. And complacency is just that. It's an opportunity for failure. It's an opportunity for us to go back where we should not be, do the things we should not do, and be the person we should not be. Complacency does that. Complacency has been the downfall of many great events in our history. I read books over my years, and I love history books. And there's a book called At Dawn We Slept. And it's a book that talks about what happened when Pearl Harbor got attacked. And the book's premise is simply this, is that while the entire world was at war with Germany and England were at war and all that happened over there with Russia, and the United States stayed as a pacifist, stayed out of everything. We were not developing any machinery. We were not developing any weaponry. We simply were living our American dream and staying neutral in everything. And during this time, there became some tensions with Japan. Japan had attacked Manchuria. It was ready to go into China. United States was living this comfortable life of being just diplomats. They were having discussions with Japan, trying to talk them out of the things they were doing. But we appeared to be very weak because at that time, we were very complacent, as this book talks about. And we all know what happened on December 7th, 1941, when Japan attacked Pearl Harbor and all those people died. And it's one place I want to visit on my bucket list to see the Arizona Memorial and remember fellow sailors that gave their all. But that tragedy in that book, At Dawn We Slept, gives the whole point of the reason why it took place, because America was complacent. We were living on our laurels. We were enjoying the fruits of things that we had. We were enjoying the economy that was growing. We were enjoying peace and prosperity, and we were staying out of conflict by choice because we simply didn't want to get involved until, of course, we were attacked. And then FDR gave that speech where he says, this will be a date that will live on in infamy, a word he used to remind us forever that never be complacent. And throughout history, many times tragedies have taken place, attacks have taken place, because of complacency. In the business world, there are many businesses that used to be really well-known, very active. They became very strong businesses on the stock market. They were booming. But because they did not change, they become complacent in what they were doing. They no longer exist today, because they were not ready to change their format of how they did business. They simply thought this will be always the way it should be. And if you remember the store's Blockbuster, you probably know what I'm talking about. We used to go to the video stores and rent a movie, keep it for 3 days. If you're late, they charge you like $95 or something for the movie. But Blockbuster went out of business because their business plan was very complacent. They were resting on their laurels. But I've seen other businesses that recreate themselves over and over. McDonald's is a business that basically has recreated itself over and over. When it began to lose market share because they serve lunch and dinner, they begin to think, what else can we do? And the idea came up, why don't you serve breakfast also? And they begin to tap into that. And I say all these things for this reason. Any organization, any church that rests on their laurels, that begins to get satisfied with what we have, that begin to say, we have finally achieved. And that's one of the things I want to mention here in this service today. Some of us have been in this church for 18 years. In fact, it was this week, 18 years ago, that we had our organizational service that we actually incorporated our church. We started in April, but we actually took a few months, and we had our first baptism service this week in a swimming pool. And we organized, my father came and he spoke, and he actually chaired the meeting in which we organized the church when I was selected as a permanent pastor. And I'm glad my dad was a part of it. I'm looking forward to having him here to be a part of our ministry soon. And the thing about it is we have gone through a lot. There have been times we were growing, there were times that we were shrinking. Churches are very transient. When I was asked by the bank, we get the mortgage, what is your average weekly attendance? And I try to explain to them that churches no longer estimates of their attendance by weekly. They do it by biweekly because many times there are people that are here this week would be absent next week, and sometimes that happens quite a bit. So I usually take 2 weeks in numbers and do an estimate from that, which shows us a true figure, and sometimes even a month because people are transient. They work Sundays. Back when I was a kid, a lot of places, the Blue Law, nobody worked Sundays, and women didn't work when I was a kid. I mean, that was the thing, the way it was in the 50s and 60s. It wasn't until really in the late 60s and stuff where it began two households. In 1972, when our country went off the gold standards, it kind of forced two-income households to be able to survive. Things have changed, and I try to explain that to the business plan, to the bank and stuff, that we measure that way. But we begin to have ups and downs, and we begin to pray for our own building. We looked at building after building and property after property and almost got into some situations I'm glad we did not get into. God sometimes has a way of closing doors that we're very thankful for. And then we get into this building, and the excitement level, the energy, the financial contributing to what we're doing here came in, and we could not have done it without the sacrificial giving. But the thing we have to watch out for is that once we achieve, and once that our business plan has become to fruition, and once that we have now have a nice building, and now we have comfortable seating, aren't you so glad the wooden pews are gone? Did anybody really like those? She liked the wooden. We need to, if we have an extra, we want to cut it down to a one-seater and give it to her to take home. To me, I love these soft seats. And this was $15,000 worth of stuff given to us free from a church in Virginia because they're building a new building. They didn't need them. I'm so glad that they were building a new building because now we were got the fruits of this. We begin to do so many things, and the excitement's there, and we have so many plans we want to do, but we have to be very careful that we don't become complacent. There's a quote I read. There's no author to it. It was one of those unknown quotes, and it says this: the tragedy of life is often not in failure, but rather in complacency. Not in our doing too much, but rather in our doing too little. Not in living above our ability, but rather, I love this, but rather living in our living below our capacity. And I like that last phrase in that little quote there. The fear isn't success or failure. It's about getting complacent. And it's not about, you know, doing too much. It's about doing too little. But the last part of what it says is that the worst crime is not living up to our capacity. And I look at our church here and the talents, and I look at here of the people, the families, the children. When I get here early on Sundays and see them running around and having a great time, to me, we have unlimited capacity. But that capacity, that ability, that future look of what we can be, will be determined by whether we are challenged to do something better or complacent. And that goes on our own personal life, spiritually. It's easy. When I first got saved, and my story is a little different than some, I was raised in a Christian home, a pastor's family, but I was a rebellious brat, had a big fight with my father, and the day I turned 17, we argued, went down to the recruiter, and he signed me into the Navy. And it was a lot of tension over the years of me and my dad, probably the best thing he ever did for me. But I remember that when I accepted Christ, I was actually home for my brother's wedding in 1976. I got back from Cuba, and I went to the church service the Sunday after the Saturday my brother and Karen got married. And that Sunday night service, we had Sunday night services there, I felt conviction for my life, and I knew the Bible stories. I was raised in all this, and I accepted Christ at the Northline Baptist Church, my father pastored, in a church in which I finally pastored for 10 years. But I remember I got back to the ship, and I remember having a Bible for the first time, being interested in it. I remember memorizing verses. I remember taking cards, and when I was out on deck or I was doing work in the boiler room, I was a boiler technician on a ship, I remember writing scriptures down so I could have in my pocket so that I had time, I could memorize scripture. I remember looking at online courses to be able to learn more, and I remember that I felt a call in my life that I never felt before about ministry. In fact, I didn't like church. I didn't like pastors. My father was one, and I felt that he ignored a lot of us as in our family because he was so busy with ministry, he didn't have time for us. So that drew me away from the whole church thing and the whole pastor thing. And I felt this call, and I remember surrendering my life to be a pastor. And I remember I said, well, one thing I would do, when I do this, I will make sure that my family doesn't sacrifice in this, and I'll also make sure that I'm the kind of pastor that basically is not, and some pastors become control freaks. They become, you know, they have to micromanage everything. They have to, and sometimes there's a distance between the congregation and the pastor. There's not a friendship there. There's not a relationship there. They don't hang together because the pastor is always away from the membership. I said, I'm never going to do that. I'm going to be part of the crowd. I'm going to be part of the team. I want to make sure that my relationships are friendships within the church, not just outside the church. And I had all this conviction to do this, but I remember I went to college, and I was excited to get my seminary degree and college degree, and I began to pastor my first church. That didn't go well, and as a young man, 23 years old, and I remember then going to be a missionary to Japan, and that didn't go well because my father had health problems, so I came back to assist him. And I remember pastoring my home church. I thought, this is the most exciting thing in the world. This is where I got saved. This is where I grew up. This is where people, some of the deacons in that church knew me when I was a troubled kid, and now they're serving with me in ministry, and I was so excited. But as time went on, complacency set up. I began to get frustrated with myself. I began to get bored with what I was doing, and it began to hinder the work there, and God eventually sent me this way to Connecticut, to Enfield, and then eventually to start this church. And one thing I learned in all that, if you spend your work somewhere for a long period of time, and you're not fighting complacency, you're not doing the things that prevent complacency, if you don't understand that complacency can set in and ruin your ministry, you're going to be a washout. So even in this church for 18 years, every time we got to the point to where I actually no longer look forward, and that has happened, to speaking, to look forward to meeting and organizing events and things like that. And sometimes it's just simply because not get enough R&R time, not get enough occasion, because sometimes you got to go out and clear our minds and stuff like that. Some places, you know, the pastor is able to get away for a period of time to be able to clear his head and stuff. But I found for me that the key was to recreate what I wanted to do. And even when this new opportunity came, it gave me a new revigoration, if that's a word, about what we're doing. But even here, now that we're here, we have to guard ourselves, and I have to guard myself about becoming complacent. Well, this is one of the things that the Lord speaks about in the Scriptures. In fact, you know, when you study the works and the teachings of Jesus, and you read your Bible, there's a lot of warm and fuzzies. There's a lot of battle stuff in the Old Testament. There's a lot of talk about different things in our faith and our belief and, you know, handling our lives and our families and our finances and everything. But there's one subject matter that God speaks about in such a way that you kind of get the idea this is one area in which he really warns Christians about, and he gives it a description that really you have to think about, and that's what we're going to read right now. In Revelation chapter number 3, and let me set up this whole passage area here, we're going to talk about the church of Laodicea. Now let me explain what's happening here. The book of Revelation was written by John, the same person that wrote the book of John and 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. He was on the Isle of Patmos. He had been arrested, and he had been, instead of being martyred, he was put in isolation on this island all by himself. And while on this island, God came to him and gave him the revelation for the future. And that's why we have the book of Revelation that John writes. And Revelation chapter 1, 2, and 3, it's a description about some things that were happening then in the future. In chapter 4 through verse chapter 22, it's all about prophecy. But we find that John records seven letters, basically God's letters to seven churches that existed at that time. He wrote to a church at Ephesus. He wrote to a church at Sardis. He wrote to seven different churches, and he talked to them basically about who they were, what they were doing well, if they were doing well, and what they needed to change. He was critical when he needed to be critical. He was complimentary when he needed to be complimentary. But he wrote to these seven churches, and one of the churches he wrote to was the church of Laodicea. Now, a lot of times, just to give you a little bit of theology here, people believe not only were these seven churches, but because this is a prophetic book, that he was talking about seven different times in history leading up to the very last time before the Lord returns, which is the age of Laodicea. And I believe that. He also was talking about the temperature and the personality that churches have to watch out for, and I really believe that. So what we're going to read, this letter was written to a church that had a problem. But it's also written to our church to warn us about a problem, and that problem is complacency. And he's pretty direct when he does this. Look what it says here. To the angel, and that word angel can be messenger, many believe it's the word pastor. To the pastor of the church of Laodicea, write, these are the words of the Amen, the faithful, the true witness, the rulers of God's creation. I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were either one or the other. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot or cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth. You say, I am rich and I have acquired wealth and do not need a thing. But do you realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked? I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in fire, so you may become rich, and white clothes to wear, so you can cover your shameful nakedness, and salve to put on your eyes so you can see. Those whom I have rebuked and disciplined, so to be earnest and repent. Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person, and they will be with me. To the one who is victorious, I will give the right to sit with me on the throne, by my throne, just as I was victorious and sat down with my Father on his throne. Whoever has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. It's a pretty direct description here. He talks about the fact that this church was neither hot or cold. He says, I wish you were hot or cold. I wish you'd make up your mind, what is your spiritual temperament? What is your spiritual temperature? I mean, either be 100% excited for me, or basically just stop doing anything, because by being lukewarm, you are something that I wish I could have spit out of my mouth. Pretty graphic. He talks about the fact that you need to try and get gold that's refined by fire, which means you need to do things that are more precious than material things. But in this dialogue here that Jesus Christ is having with this church, he's telling them basically is that, you know, it'd be great if you were on fire for me, excited for me, wanting to make a world of difference for me. But so you wouldn't be an offense to the world. It'd be better if you can't do that, that you just be cold and die off. And it's interesting because I've seen churches throughout my ministry that are excited for God, but eventually they die off. Back when I was a kid, the largest church, really one of the largest churches in the country at that time, was the Temple Baptist Church. My father was on staff there. Every Sunday morning back in the 30s and 40s and 50s and even 60s and 70s, it would have, you know, 5,000 people in services on a Sunday morning and 5,000 people in a service on Sunday evening. And I remember going to that church as a kid, and I remember my brother Dave singing in quartets, and I remember my dad teaching a class there, and I remember Dr. G.B. Vick, who was the pastor, who was never an ordained minister. He basically was a business executive who the church wanted him to lead, and he led it with a lot of delegation, one of my heroes of the faith. They called him Mr. Vick. There was a book written called him The Clergyman of the Century back in 1972 or 73. And that church was the epitome of every church in a denomination that we were a part of. It was the key church. It had built a beautiful building. It had everything you can think of that a church would need. Dr. Vick passed away in 1975, and obviously the city of Detroit mourned his loss. The mayor and the governor and all those attended his funeral. And there was a couple other pastors that came in, and Truman Dollar came in, and he tried to follow Dr. G.B. Vick, and he basically was an individual that had such great oratorial gifts. He could speak so well. But the church began to decline under his leadership. He finally resigned the church when it got down to about 2,000 people, and couple years later, they found him dead in a hotel room with suicide. Then they brought in A.B. Henderson. The guy preached messages only 16 minutes long each time, but he was the most powerful preacher you could hear. If you like a short preacher, he would have been your guy. He was about 6'7", Texan, tall, lanky guy that just, when you listen to him, you just can stop listening to him. And he passed away, and the church began to dwindle. And a friend of mine named Brad Powell came there. He's my age. At that time, he was probably in his, well, obviously, he was 38 years old, because when I came here, he went there when I came here to Connecticut. And he pastored that church, and it began to drop down to 6,500, 400. Now, this is a matter of 10 years from 5,000. And the church finally got to the place, because what was happening is every time the pastor wanted to change for the new millennium, to change for the new things, the powers that be wanted to stay in the same routine and complacent. They kept saying, we are Temple Baptist Church. We are Temple Baptist Church. And they stay complacent. And they finally close the doors. And this young pastor somewhat felt defeated, but he took a group of those people, group that were with him, and they went about 10 miles away, and they started another church called Northridge Church with a handful of people. He took the vision he had, trying to get them out of complacency, trying to get them to change a little bit, to don't get rest in your laurels. Don't just be happy you got a new building. Don't be happy that you got, you know, now you finally succeeded, you achieved, you know, you have a permanent place. I'm talking to our church. He tried to tell you, we got to keep recreating. We can't always do the same things over and over again. We got to find out how to reach out to the community. We got to make our church relevant to the community. He says, we got to make ourselves a church where unchurched people want to go. In fact, his quote was, we need a church for people that have given up on church but not on God. And I always loved that. He put a big billboard out on the side of the road to try to attract his, says that Northridge is for liars. And I'll listen to all the other things. Says, people who are living normal lives, who are broken people and stuff. And he began to take his vision, which he tried to get this complacent church to listen to buy into. But they wouldn't do it. He wanted to bring in new music. No, we got a piano and an organ. He wanted to bring in more young groups to sing, a little bit of Christian rock. Oh, no, we can't have that because we're Temple Baptist Church. We are fundamentalist conservative. He says, yes, but you used to run 5,000. Now you're running 400. But we're Temple Baptist Church. Our building is paid for. This building sat 5,000 people. Now, can you imagine what 400 people look like in a 5,000-seat auditorium? But they would not listen to him. So he took his vision for change. He took his vision for what could be. And he went a few miles away and he started Northridge Church. And this past Easter, they had 7 services and they ran 40,000. On a given weekend, they run 15,000 to 20,000. If they only would have listened, break your complacency, be willing to change. It's got to have buy-in from the congregation. It's not just pastor-led. It is simply the people saying, let's keep going. Let's never get complacent. We have a building. We have 4 acres of property just about. We have new padded seats. What's next? And that's the way it has to be in our church and in our spiritual lives. In our spiritual life, many times, you remember the days when you first got saved and followed Christ, however the terminology you want to, you know, you use, and you begin to think about, oh, I'm looking forward to this. What can I volunteer for? You know, I want to invest in children's lives. I want to work with the teens. I want to do this. I can sing. I can play an instrument. And all this excitement that over time begin to get complacent. And I can tell you, when you're a parent, when you're complacent, I'm going to give you a little conviction here right now. When your kids no longer even assume you're going to do anything for God that week, church or otherwise, you know you've gotten complacent. I'm thankful for my parents who never allowed me and my two brothers to miss church on Sundays. Now, I hated them at the time for it. Don't get me wrong. I remember my parents telling me, you can work on Sundays, but you have to tell your boss you can't come in until after services are over on Sunday. And they lived by that. I did the same things with my kids until they got to an age to where they had to make their own decisions and stuff. But the thing about it is that complacency is a killer for spiritual life. It's a killer for a church. It's a killer for a marriage. It's a killer for a relationship with your family. It's a killer. And we as parents and grandparents, we have to invest in the spiritual nature of our kids. And if we become complacent, what do you think that they're going to do? And we deal with heavy subjects like heaven or hell. We deal with heavy subjects like spiritual growth. We deal with the fact that, you know, we want to tell our kids that if you have a need, pray to God. And you got it, then they can turn to you, mom and dad, and say, listen, I would pray to God, but I never see you pray to God. I would pray to God, but you know, if you want God on our side, mom and dad, why aren't you on his side? A little convicting there. Complacency is terrible for a church. It's terrible for a family. It's terrible for our spiritual lives. That's why as we go into the fall season, we're going to rework small groups, and we're going to have on-site small group. We're looking at having a midweek motivation, which is be me teaching a class, because on Sunday we kind of give you a shotgun message. We try to hit everybody, but we're going to start dealing with some theology and stuff you may want to learn. We're going to give you all the tools that you need to not be complacent in your spiritual growth. But you're going to have to decide if you want it, and if you want to grow, and you want to create something new in your life. Let me talk about a few things here, and I wrote them down. These are not on the PowerPoint. I found myself giving the outline on Monday or Tuesday, and all week long I'm adding things. I just added one thing that came to my mind a few minutes ago. That quote, idle hands are a devil's workshop, just came to my mind a second ago. But I want to give you some things about complacency real quick here. Complacency creates an atmosphere that kills creativity. When you're complacent, even in your work, it will kill your creativity. When you first go to work somewhere, you have all these new ideas, and then eventually you have no more ideas. It's because you got complacent. There's always something to change and improve and develop. There's always something in church to create and improve and develop. It creates an atmosphere that kills creativity. Complacency is contagious. It is contagious. If you, let's be frank about this, you become who you hang with. If you hang with critical people that are always critical and talk about other people, guess what you will do eventually? And any personality, any type of human trait becomes contagious. And that brings us to the last point there. Complacency corrupts an organization and leads to its demise, as I talked about Temple Baptist Church. Let me talk to you real quick here, and we're going to close out in a minute, about overcoming complacency. But I got real quiet in here today, okay? I don't know if this all made you nervous or whatever. So, overcoming complacency is reconnect to your passion. Recreate to reconnect to your passion. If you're a business person, maybe you're a small business, maybe you have something you do that you're in a rut right now. Think about how that you can recreate that to reconnect to your passions, to make it even better than it was before. Next, you want to change your routine to reinvigorate your life. Now, I said last week and the week before, routines aren't bad. Ruts are. Routines aren't bad. Routines sometimes are very good for our lives because it keeps us doing the right things. I mean, we always talk about routine. I'm in a rut. I'm just routine over same thing. We create the routine. Do something different. But in all reality, change your routines that will reinvigorate your life. And last of all, associate with people who are excited. You know what Cornerstone needs more than anything else in leadership? Isn't the most talented, although we do have talented leaders, and it isn't the most knowledgeable in church stuff. It's the most excited people. We need to be led by excited people who are excited about church, who are excited about what we're doing, who are excited. Because if they're not excited, they will lend themselves to being complacent. And complacency will kill our church. I gave this as the last one because I knew after all I talked about cultivating and connecting and contributing and catalyst, which I enjoyed talking about that message, I knew that this one would be right down where we need to get. And I chose to do this last for this reason. We got into this building the first weekend of April, and we've done well. I mean, every week there's something new where the soundboard's here, so you don't have to hear us bouncing off the walls when we sing in the band. The new chairs and stuff. Every week there's been something new. And I want to thank Pastor Tony, who's done a lot of logistical work, because every week he's doing something. I want to thank those that have volunteered their time. Some that are not even actually members of our church, electricians and stuff, who really just are very, they really support what we're doing. I want to thank all of you that contributed to get the down payment. I want to thank all of you that still come in and do little things during the week. And there's a lot of little things still have to be done. But I want to say this, is that we got in here on April 1st, and now it's the July 1st is tomorrow. So we're talking April, May, June, 3 months. And we paid the bills, our mortgage. We no longer owe $320,000. I think we own something like $319,000. No one has that. But don't get complacent. I want to thank you for signing up for Vacation Bible School, because this is a team effort. Whatever we do is going to be a team effort. We don't want to see you overwork, don't get me wrong. But I really believe no one has to if we all invest ourselves into what we're doing. Don't get satisfied with where we've come. The teens may now have an air hockey table. What's next for the kids? We may have a nice building, but I'm already thinking on that before I retire or die, and I'm looking to go for 71 years old, which is 10 years, the way I look at it, I'd like to see a new addition with two new offices with a bathroom in the office for me. That's all I've ever asked for, okay? I joke. I envision this property being filled with people, Vacation Bible School. I envision us having to go to two services. I envision so many things. I'm excited about what we're doing. If I get complacent, come kick me in the rear end. Thank you, honey. And if you get complacent, someone will do the same. I'm going to give the walk away in a second, but just let me share something from my heart, okay? Down the hallway, and even in this room, we have some teens. We have little boys and girls down there that need to have a place they can grow up into. I never want them to stand 20 years from now and give a testimony in a church service about complacency and said, I was once a member of Cornerstone Church. And they wouldn't get excited, and they wouldn't change. I got complacent, and it no longer exists. Grace Episcopal boasts about the fact that this church has been in Broadbrook for 200 years. Now, I don't know when the Lord's coming back, and I'm not planning on being here myself that long. But in all reality, we started this church here in this facility, in this building, our new start in 2019. And if the Lord doesn't return in 21-19 or 22-19, they need to have a 100-year anniversary, but have a massive amount of people that have changed this community and changed lives. It will not happen if we get complacent. Here's a walk away. To break out of complacency, we must intentionally move from where we are to where we should be. And that word I use quite a bit the last 6 weeks, if you've been here every week, intentionally. Nothing has ever happened for good by accident. You may say, well, some things just happen by chance. Sometimes chance looks a lot like hard work. Sometimes luck looks like a lot of energy. Sometimes what can happen is because we intentionally decided to do it. Would you bow your heads for just a moment? This concludes the series. I'll be speaking the next 2 weeks before my wife and I head on vacation. I got a couple messages I want to share with you. And then Pastor Tony will speak for a couple weeks while we're getting a little downtime. But this six-week series was really important for me because I wanted it to be the foundational part of our starting of our ministry. I want to thank you. Some of you couldn't be here each week because of work or whatever. Some of you listen online to the other ones. I appreciate that. But this has been a full package of things I wanted to discuss. And this message was difficult because it's pretty challenging. It was a prophetic warning. Because as a pastor who has pastored four or five churches, one church doesn't exist anymore, I have seen what success can do to a church when you finally achieve some things. You would think that getting our building now, everything would just fall into place and people would come in. And let me tell you something. It still takes some work. For instance, we have connect cards. We have invite cards. We have invite cards. Did you realize that there's probably a 60 to 80% chance that if you personally invite somebody to church with an invite card to a specific day that you know you can sit with them in church, tell them no obligation, they have to come back, we just want you to come and experience what we're doing here, that they will come? People sometimes say, okay, what's our marketing strategy? Our marketing strategy is doing the things we're doing. When we get more money, we will do more things. We knew that we took all of our savings to get into this building. It's going to take a while to build up. And when we get to that point, we will do some direct mailing. We will do some things. We have done some things to get our name out there. We joined the chamber, and they are promoting us for all our events and stuff to the community. And we have nice signage. And the building itself, when people drive by, is a great attraction. But churches don't grow because you have an ad somewhere or a banner somewhere. Churches grow because people that love their church are not complacent, but excited about sharing their church with other people. And this simple thing to do is take an invite card, invite a friend, a waiter, a waitress, the person who cuts your hair, whatever it may be, and say, hey, come on out to church. Just come one time with me. I really believe that we have a great church, great people, great music. I think we have a great church. We're not a prudish church. We're not a judgmental church. We don't meddle in people's business. You know, we're not one of the, I think that we are a place, when we speak on Sunday, we try to make it a conversation, not just speaking to, but speaking with our congregation. And we're a bunch of people that are all messed up at times. So if somebody says, well, I don't like being around churchy people, well, either do I. Or I got things in my life. We all got things in our life. We all are screw-ups at sometimes, okay? Welcome to the bunch. I mean, this is a place, and I'll say it just like Brad Powell said, this is a church for people that have given up on church but not on God. Because we strive not to be churchy. And if we ever get that way, remind us of that. I want kids down the hallway to love the Lord first and then enjoy their church. Not worship their church. I want you to dress as you're comfortable doing. I want you to feel at home. Grab a coffee. If you spill a coffee on the carpet, that's fine. It cleans up. Let's share what we have and take the energy we have and the excitement and take it to the world. The world right around our blocks. Father, we thank you so much for this time together. I pray, Lord, that you would just use this series as you see fit. I pray, Lord, that this lesson today, this talk today, Lord, was helpful, was challenging, maybe convicting. God, I pray that some people that will take it to heart and maybe realize it's time to level up their excitement and begin to put down their complacency and begin to turn things around. Bless us this day, we ask in Christ's name. Amen.